Todd came along today.
Sirius XM Sports presents
At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
After a one-year hiatus, coming to you live from the University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program Symposium on Racing and Gaming, Tucson, Arizona, on the way to Tacoma. Rick Hammerly, good morning to from your alma mater, your stomping ground.
Yes. Yes, back to the scene of
many crimes.
Minor crimes.
And misdemeanors.
You know, it's good to be back. It's good to be on the big train. We were just at the Oaklawn Racing Casino Resort.
Yeah.
Now we're at Lowe's Ventana Canyon Resort. So, you know, we're stepping up, right?
It's the resort tour.
It's not too bad. So, no, it's good to be back here. A little quiet here this morning.
always on the Monday because it doesn't really officially start till later this evening, although there are some quiet get-togethers and a few different seminars. I'm involved in one with NTRA as we talk to a group of racetracks about getting involved in contest play. So I'm looking forward to that. You've got a racetrack racing secretary gathering. These are sort of workshop kind of scenarios. And then after the reception tonight, things get going in earnest for Tuesday and Wednesday. And this is a particularly anticipated. I think that's the way we've been building it up, leading to this visit, given the fairly monumental changes going on and potential changes. That includes the presence of everybody from HISA, including Charles Sheeler, and presentations involved from their various operating committees. Tom Rooney, who I'm looking forward to actually getting a chance to talk to, who's going to take over from Alex Waldrop, and actually I think has as of December 1st. So Tom Rooney having his first experience at in an official capacity in the industry. So looking forward to him. And, of course, Robert Hartman, who we haven't brought up really, who's the new chair of the racetrack industry program. And so we'll get in and talk to as many as possible. First, let me get in the bon mot, Sirius 219 XM 201 Sports Zone 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online and at our website as well, stevebick.com. So plenty to talk about the symposium. And of course, as we've said, as for years, every time we've come, the students, it's about the students. They put this together, Rick. It's the highlight of their academic year, and also the opportunity for them to sit with mentors. And there's so much about the program that is just, become, I don't want to say institutionalized, but, certainly, ingrained throughout the industry.
I'm glad you said that about the students, because as a former student, looking forward to symposium week or 3, 4, 5 days, whatever it may be, both nerve-wracking and exciting. Because nerve-wracking because the students put this whole show on, meaning set it up, line up all the participants, get the booths ready. It's kind of a organizational situation, but which is tense sometimes, getting down to the wire, getting everything ready. And on the other side, it's a wonderful opportunity, unlike probably any other. Very few industries offer this, where you can come face to face with the leaders of the industry and just walk up to them and say, "Hi, I'm Rick, and like to meet you," and they'll just come right back to you. Racetrack managers, tote companies, anything to do with the racetrack, they're here. So if you're interested and you're a student here, literally you get a chance to walk right up to it. And it's like anything, they present you with the opportunity here at the school, and it's up to you to take it forward. But as you said, the industry is loaded with some wildcats are all over the place, and to come through the school here and go through it's really kind of neat. Now, 2 years ago, we were sitting right here, and I had just finished or was wrapping up a semester
right
where I they went to deep into the bullpen and called me in, and I taught a few classes here, and it was really a fun learning experience for me. And it was before COVID had hit, so we were kind of rolling along. And then, you know, last year we had to miss a symposium. You know, and things like this, they lose their momentum if they don't keep going. And you mentioned the little change here. Robert Hartman has taken over. And Phil O'Hara, who has, you know, longtime racetrack executive, is here as an assistant and really breathing some life into the program after the COVID situation. So that's what we need to see, you know, more students involved. And the industry responds by not only interning a lot of the students, but ended up hiring them and for full-time careers.
Well, and we should mention Betty, certainly.
And you know, it seems like so long ago, and Betty's who brought me in, and she's with here for and just did a wonderful job. And she's moved on to work for Turf Publicis. Is that where she is?
I'm not sure.
I forget where she moved on, and she just did great. And like I said, the COVID came, and they made some changes here at the school. And, you know, it's a good – sometimes change is good. I'm not saying there was anything that happened, but with the break, maybe there needed to be a little change. And Robert and Phil are here, and I've heard some good things that are happening at the school, and we'll continue on here at the symposium.
We'll get some details, undoubtedly, and usually, you know, have an opportunity to, you know, to have those conversations as well as talk to the students.
Yeah, let's try and get some students on.
No, always.
I've run into last night. I ran into two of them. Two of my. My students,
you're,
I can
look
actually
at you,
say, I
look
can
at
say
you.
That from a couple years ago.
Professor Hammerly.
Yeah, right. that worked for a little bit. That was really a blast doing that. But coming here, and so when I was going to school here in the late 80s, mid to late 80s, we did have the symposium might have started. It was somewhere else, and then it came here for the first couple of years. And boy, that was a blast working at this palace up here in the foothills. And then it actually got too big, if you want to say too big for here, and moved over to Paloma, which is another resort to the west of here, the west of Paloma. Little bit bigger, a little bit more, you know, ballrooms type of things. But I think it got too spread out. And as it downsized a little bit, they made the right decision to come back here. This is the home of the symposium. It just feels right up here. You come here, and they have a beautiful golf course, and you kind of stay in the area up here in the foothills, and there's, you know, plenty of places to eat and plenty of things to do, plenty of hikes to go on. And those of you who have never been here, if you are traveling to Tucson Symposium or not, this is the place to stay in town.
My favorite, I forgot to say, I was going to send this to Tina. I'm staying in a section of the hotel I've never stayed in, and right outside the outside the kind of the walkway, there was this rock that's engraved, and it kind of made me laugh. I'm not finding it, but there it is, right there. Caution: wildlife can be dangerous, which I thought was good advice. And are they talking what those habaneros or whatever? Not
javelinas.
The javelinas, the wild pigs.
I say more snake than anything else.
Snakes,
to tell you the truth, as you walk. And you notice how they make the sign where you can barely see it into the rock. And,
yeah.
And also, if you drive by the road out here,
oh, you'll drive right by.
You drive right by. There's a little rock with like a pen flashlight on it that says Los Ventana Canyon, as the lights just came on here. But, you know, think 25, 30 years ago when this thing was built, it's literally like it looks like a castle, a fortress up in the mountains. And this was the only thing up here at the time. So it was really kind of special when you came up here. And we were able to commandeer a few things and have a little fun early on before they caught on. But the place has just continued on. And it's funny, I've obviously been in Hot Springs for a while, so my wife figured, you know what, let me jump on the train. So she she's here. She beat me here, actually.
Oh, wow.
After my...
excellent.
Just to come and say hi and, you know, maybe hit a spa treatment or two
very
while we're there. And she actually beat me here because I had a little situation on the road yesterday, which was...
Yeah, you said you had an adventurous trip.
Yeah, you know, traveling is a game, right? And I like playing that game. Whether you're on the road, whether you're on the car, whether you're in the plane, you know, decisions to make, go left, go right, eat here, wait till you eat there. So, leaving Little Rock yesterday, an innocent little flight from Little Rock to Denver, Denver to Tucson. So, I get to the airport on time, as you know, you do, about an hour before flight time, and I get to the gate, and I look out there, and the plane's not there. So, whenever the plane's not there, something, you know, goes off in my head, like, okay, if I miss my connection... What do I do? So I'm planning ahead already. I go to the gate, and I asked. There was a lady there, and she wasn't being very responsive, but there was this maintenance guy, big black guy, great guy, said, hey, when's this plane supposed to be here? And he looked at his little computer, and he said, 12:36, which was in about 10 minutes. And I looked at my little app that I use, and I'm going, my app says, like, closer to 1, which, you know, I'm worried about making my connection. He goes, nope, says 12:36. And I go, boy, I'd sure like to bet the over on that one, right? So I go sit down, and I'm sitting there looking out the window, and I see this plane land. All of a sudden, it's coming to the gate. I'm going, wow. 5 minutes later, the plane's up at the gate, right? And so I'm thinking, yeah, I would have lost the bet. So I take $20 out of my left pocket, and I put it in my right pocket. And I go, you know, if I see this guy, I'm going to give him 20, just, you know, just as a little gesture. So about 2 minutes later, he walks over. He goes, hey, man, you would have lost that bet. Big smile on his face. And I get up and I go, yeah, I know. So I'm reaching in my pocket. He goes, no. I said, no, man, I'm telling you. I saved 20. I was going to give it. So I give him 20. He gives me a hug. Thanks a lot.
That's great.
Just a great feel. So turns out the plane ends up being there, but it has mechanical problems, right? So nothing they can do. So I just want to know if it's going to make it to Denver so I can make other arrangements. So I'm on United. The next flight to United from Denver to Tucson is booked. So I said, you know what? Since my wife's coming, I got to get here. I booked a flight on Southwest, 10:30 at night, which meant like a 7-hour layover in Denver, right? But you got to do it. You got to do it. So get off at Denver, kind of thinking what I'm going to do. I'm walking down that little tunnel, getting off the plane to get out to, you know, the main airport. There's a gate agent there, and she looks at me and points at me and goes, are you Mr. Hammer? And I go, yeah. She goes, when you get out there, go see the agent. We have a ticket for you. And I said, what do you mean? She goes, you're not going to make your connection. We've booked you a flight on the next flight to Tucson. And I go, what do you mean? She goes, we got your bag taken care of. I said, how'd you know it was me? She said, they called ahead from Little Rock. So the guy, they saw that it was going to make the flight. They called Denver and said, get this guy on this flight that was booked.
Wow.
Gave me a ticket and ended up waiting 2 hours and got the next flight down here. So instead of getting here at 2 in the morning, I got here at 9:30. So it was just kind of a cool situation that they went out of their way to make a phone call because I didn't know how did they know who I was. So they must have described, you know, the guy in the blue hat or whatever, because she pulled me out of line and said, there's a ticket for you. I went up to the counter. The lady goes, Mr. Hammerly, here's your ticket.
Unbelievable.
Like, yes. So very that? good karma, good kind of, you know. Also, never get mad at the people behind the counter
because
it's not their fault.
You can't.
But it just worked out. It was like, you know, put a smile on my face. So it was all good. Plus, I'm in Denver, and I bet against Denver, and I didn't want to be in Denver while they were playing, rooting against them. It was bad karma. So I got out of town and ended up winning the bet, too. So it was a very cool travel day.
I love it. Well, my man Freddie Moe, Freddie says he thinks it's the gate guy, the $20 bet.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
Right?
There's no doubt about it.
He made it happen.
He made it happen. No, we had a supervisor on him, so he made a phone call. Nice. I mean, because... they told me the flight was booked, and, you know, they found one in the hip pocket. So it was just a cool – I just walked out and go, you know
that's
what?
That's great.
It was just a cool – Christmas Christmas time is here already.
Look at that. It is. It was a Christmas miracle.
It was a Christmas miracle.
Actually, it was a Hanukkah miracle. It was the
last day of Hanukkah.
It was the eighth night of Hanukkah.
We'll take
Happy
it.
Hanukkah,
so.
Everybody. I'll I had a very pleasant trip here as well, because of course I had to drive from because I find Little Rock impossible to come in and out of. If I'm coming west to east, it's fine. When I'm trying to come east, it's a problem. So I book mostly through Memphis, and you know, it's 2 hours and 40 minutes from Hot Springs, which for me is nothing. I don't mind that kind of a drive ever.
Well, so that's part of the travel game. You decide, yeah. Like, do I fly here and drive, or do I take a shot at airport? You have bad luck at Albany. I have the worst luck at, when I book a flight out of Albany, I also book a hotel room for that night, because when it cancels, I have a place to stay.
That's funny, because
flying out of Saratoga when I leave, 50% of the time.
Wow.
The plane's 2 hours late. I miss my connection.
Well, and you know, and I've gotten, when I moved to Greenwich in 99, Southwest literally started service out of Albany about the same time. And, you know, my first exposure to Southwest, I think I've told this, my first exposure was when I was living in Kansas City. And I'd really never heard of Southwest, you know, having lived in the East and making my way. And they were, you know, young and up and coming. And they used to have the flights from Kansas City to Chicago for $19. My girlfriend Janice and I would literally, at 3 o'clock on a Friday, would say, you want to go to Chicago? We'll go for dinner? All right. And we would, for $19 each, we would fly to Chicago. We'd go out to the Cape Cod room, you know, where Rosebud, wherever you wanted to go, and stay over, you know, the Ambassador East, and unbelievable. And then fly back $19. You couldn't beat it. But I've never had an issue coming home out through into Albany. Yeah. Or I think I had one time we had a major delay from Baltimore getting up to Albany because of weather. But it's funny.
Well, the general rule, which I made a mistake in Little Rock, is you take the first plane out because the plane's there, obviously, first plane in the morning. Yeah. When you get into the mid-afternoon, you have a chance of the backup just happening.
Things can go awry.
Albany, because usually I don't leave early in the morning. Usually, I leave in the afternoon.
After the race day.
You know, get a few races in and head up the track. So you have too many things can go wrong.
That's a good point.
So,
well, what went right on my front? First of all, stopped for breakfast on the way out of Little Rock, and I should have realized when Ron Moquette said, when he gave the push on the best cafe, I should have realized what it was associated with, because I had driven past those beautiful Best cottages while they were being renovated. These are 20s, 30s era motor court, and there's a bunch of them in Hot Springs. And there was a major investment put into this motor court, and it was just gorgeous. But I didn't even realize there was this little cafe in front. That's what he was referring to when he said the best cafe. The food was exceptional. Place was packed. There's five little stools, bar stool, tall bar stools, actually, if you're an individual or maybe a pair, so they could seat me. Very good. So we'll go when I come back to town. So Moquette was dead on. So points to Ron for best cafe. So that's where I started the morning. So then I get to Memphis. My flight was delayed out about 45 minutes, so I had plenty of time to schmay around. I drive around Memphis, went to the Lorraine Motel, and which is always emotional.
Got to get there. And, I've never been there.
It's just you don't even have to go into the museum.
I just want to see the sign type of thing.
Very affecting. And then the Graceland drive by, which is always amusing to me, and so forth. And then I had to make a lunch decision, because now it's getting to be 2:30. I got time for lunch. There's barbecue options in Memphis.
Which
barbecue were you going to go? And I had never been to Central. So I said, you know what? I almost went to Payne's, which I've been to before. And I said, I've got to go to Central. So I went to Central Barbecue. And I said, I'm just going to get a sandwich. I said, you know what? I said, they got a little three rib niblet. I said, well, I think I'm making a mistake if I don't get the little three rib niblet. get the three rib niblet, and I went for that first. I figured the sandwich, you know, the sandwich is wrapped up nice. It'll keep. I got to tell you, knowing what I know now, I would have gotten a slab to basically, you know, put in my saddlebag and eat over the next 8 to 12 hours. They were as exceptional as I've ever had anywhere, and I've had a lot of ribs. And I got the dry, which was smart. Instead of having them sauce, I was in the car. You couldn't park. I'll tell you one thing. That was a headache. So I ordered online and then pulled into one of their wait lanes. It was very clever. And so they bring it to the car. They put the pictures up on Twitter, and people responded immediately. Just spectacular. And that's not to say that, you know, Central has the best ribs, and the sandwich was spectacular too. Melt in your mouth. The pork was just insanely good, but the ribs, I got to tell you, unbelievable.
I'll mark it down.
Unbelievable.
As I guarantee, I'll be making a few Memphis trips.
Absolutely.
From Hot Springs during this long meet.
Well, and then got here, and the one thing that I didn't get to do. The tumbleweed tree in Chandler, the tumbleweed tree and the big Christmas parade in Chandler in Phoenix was Saturday night. And Tina and I, it sort of landed in our lap the first time I came here 6 years ago. We stayed. Tina booked the Crown Plaza in Chandler, and we see this whole stage set up, and we're like, what's going on? Oh, tomorrow night, the tumbleweed tree. What? It's a Christmas tree. This goes back to the I think to the early 50s. It's all tumbleweeds, spray painted white, all lit up, and there's a lighting ceremony. There's all kinds of dancing. There's a huge parade. I mean, the Christmas parade must have been over an hour that we were outside there. And then once the parade goes by, then the stage, right, you know, in this central area of Chandler. There's all kinds of Latino culture dancing, all age groups do it like it was so much fun, and it just so happened it was Saturday night. But I was by the time I got to Sky Harbor, it was going to be too late.
Oh, good. You know, actually, the sun just came up, so it's the first time I've seen the sun because we got here late and
yeah.
I got up in the dark, and. You know, driving from the airport here, which is a long way.
Tucson
Air, well, it's way south and we're way north. So it's a
interesting.
That's a good 35, 40 minutes.
Is it really?
Oh, yeah.
So then why wouldn't everybody fly into Sky Harbor, into Phoenix?
Yeah, you get a nice drive up here. You really get to drive through the foothills.
Right.
And at night here, the Christmas lights are just starting to come up. And they're very vibrant here because Tucson itself is a dark city. I don't know if that's the right term. But the lights are kept low at night on purpose, so there's the star stuff going on up in the mountains, so they can observe more what's going on up in the sky. So it's generally a dark town, darker than normal. So when Christmas lights go up, it's just as vibrant as could be.
Wow.
And when they're wrapped around saguaros and drive around, I mean, they're really kind of cool. So last night I made some tours down a couple of streets that I know are lit up, and so. Christmas is here. It's 3 weeks away.
It is funny to see
Christmas trees.
No, the Christmas trees. The cigarros.
The saguaros.
The saguaros.
Right.
All the what's the other name for them? What am I? The cacti. Yeah.
Well, they're saguaros because it's the only region where they grow. There's actually two parks here. There's one to the west and one to the east. Saguaro National Park over here and over here. To the east of town, one over here. And I used to live near the one that was toward the east, literally.
Cool.
And if you come to Tucson, you know, take a couple hours and go see these just fantastic, just awe-inspiring cacti that just grow to the sky, literally.
And, yeah, it's very. It's so different. I say this every time we come. It's just so different here. The landscape, the moonscape, as it were. Well, Hammer, let's pause from the introduction to everything that is going to unfold here over the next couple of days. We've got plenty of racing conversation and a ton of news. Let me first of all say that at the top of the hour, Rich Migliori and Tony Black are going to join us. And you say, Rich and Tony? There must have been a jockey issue. You think? I don't even know what to say. Friday, and we've got to talk about both. You know, there was the the carryover into in New York from Friday, and then into the third day to into Saturday, and the antics of Irad Ortiz Jr. that have been discussed, you know, for now for several years. It's not like this is isolated, but it really came to a head with that performance on Friday in the eighth race. And coming over six paths like a guided missile to drop the bug boy, Omar Hernandez Moreno. It was so shocking, frankly, Rick. It must have watched the replay and you know, several people very quickly video edited and you watched it repeatedly because you couldn't believe what you were seeing. It was so egregious. And a 30-day suspension handed out yesterday by the New York Gaming Commission, and Ortiz is not contesting. It's a calendar suspension, but he was able to ride Saturday and managed even on Saturday in the wake of it to find trouble and to put a new spin, including, you know, flying elbows against Zandon and Johnny in the Remsen. I don't know if this suspension is going to be enough to wise him up and to pull him up. That's part one of this discussion, and I'm going to turn it over to Rich and Tony, and they can talk about the history of this. Their careers go back, you know, 30-plus years. So they raced against, you know, people are invoking Angel Cordero and all the historic greats and how, oh, that the progressive. I don't care how aggressive they were then, and yes, there was plenty of aggression and hard riding. That was then. This is now, and it can't go on now, and it has to be addressed, and we'll see what they say. But I you know, there could have been a DQ in the Remsen very easily. At first, it didn't seem, you know, until you watched it more often, and again, repeated viewings. You know, they, after you had repeated viewings of it, then you basically got the sense that it would not have been shocking had Mo Donegal come down. So this is a topic that has got a lot of angles to it, Rick, including stewarding and the obliviousness, frankly, and the disinterest, it seems, from the stewards to have addressed the herding. I mean, horse players have been discussing it repeatedly and on for years, and it's gone unaddressed. And this seems to be the absolute apex of the discussion.
I'm glad you're having Rich and Tony on. You know, they've been there. I want to hear what they have to say. And what you said about the replay, I had heard some chatter around the track about it, and I finally watched it. And like you said, once you watch it once, you really have to watch it again and then again and then again. And let's you know, be thankful that everybody came out of it okay, because you just never know with those things. But no, very... I don't know, crazy. I read about the stuff going on in New York, and I don't watch New York daily all the time to hear about it. But if this was the culmination of stuff that's been going on in a while, I'm glad the stewards finally did something. It'd be nice to maybe get a hold of a steward here in the next, if there's one walking by in the next couple of days, to kind of get some thought process what they're going through. I always wonder, and it's almost like society, why do we wait a day? If they're going to give him, if they're going to find, if they're going to take him down, why do we wait? It's happened on Friday, why can't we do it on Saturday instead of waiting a day and on Sunday? I always wonder why we wait so long to get things done.
Well, I'll only say that I was going to say it would feel punitive to injure the connections with the card that was scheduled for the next day. And at the same time, you could make the case, well, that would be a message that would hit home. And at the same time, though, is it fair to the connections of the horses that he's on the next day?
So I'm so on that side. I totally get it with some of the things that happen with the riders, where on smaller infractions, I totally agree with a monetary penalty, and because I don't want to hurt the bettor who's thinking about betting this horse with this rider on it. Of course, the owner, who's maybe waited a month to run this horse, the trainer, the whole connection, the whole deal. On the other hand, it always, when I first got into this game, it always amazed me how when riders, I've got plenty of rider friends, I'm not talking, trying to knock how they get things done. But it's like, okay, we're going to suspend you, but you can only ride in the big races. That's like, okay, you're grounded, but you can only go out with your girlfriend. Type of thing. I never understood that. So let me get this straight. I don't have to show up for the $5,000 claimers. I can only show up for the $100,000. You're going to let me ride on suspension? It's just never. Where's the penalty phase? Where's the penalty? And I realize you're penalizing more than just the rider in this situation. But there's enough riders out there that can take over. It's part of this. It's part of the way. You know, it's like it just never. Hit me as a penalty. It's like, yeah, you don't have to do your homework, but you got your girlfriend, type of thing.
I get it. And of course, Joel Rosario hitting the ground and fracturing, getting a hairline fracture of a rib and being sidelined and the mounts that he lost. So... It's different. I don't know. The best adjudicators of this, I think are Tony and Rich for discussion purposes, because they can talk about the historic aspect about what was tolerated and what wasn't. Ray Pollock had a very succinct little piece on his site, one of his commentaries, where he invoked Eddie Arcaro's year-long suspension for a vicious attack, and Arcaro was contrite long term about it, and that it changed his approach, and that it smartened him up.
To me, which is one reason why I think it is so important to have an ex rider up in the steward stand, even if they weren't Hall of Fame rider or whatever, just someone that's been out there. And I tell you, I get asked a lot of times, hey, would you ever want to be a steward? Hey, how come you're not a steward? Because you know what? If you want to say you want to be an NFL referee, I'd maybe do that. Because I played football. I know the rules. I know the tricks. I understand that. I've never ridden a horse. I would have a hard time sitting in a room telling Mike Smith that he should have done this or he should have done that. So I just don't want to ever be. I wouldn't know how to answer it. So That's one of the reasons I will never be a steward. I've never done it. I've never played it. And so I don't want any part of telling them, you know, how to, you know, play their game. So I think it's so important now, and I've seen more and more steward stands go out of their way to have an ex-jock up there, which I think you just have to have.
The former rider equation, a longstanding practice, essentially. At the same time, Tony will tell you, you know, he went through ROPE, the Racing Officials Accreditation Program, and then when he was trying to land a steward's job, was kept out of the stand in Massachusetts because of an incident going back to the 80s that was dredged up, that was absolutely unrelated to who Tony is then and what his contribution could have been as a steward. So he went through this and then ends up, you know, not even being utilized. Then Tony would be a phenomenal steward. It would have been absolutely terrific. I don't think he's disappointed long term here that it didn't happen. But I'm just, you know, quite willing to let them explain what the mindset is and you know, how much of this is taken care of by the riders in the room. You know, we've always heard that too. You know, guys will come back. You know, there was, of course, the Ortiz, Paco Lopez dust up at Gulfstream earlier this year. I think that the biggest issue here has been that the stewards, and we're talking strictly right now New York, they have allowed dangerous riding and herding to go on for years and years. And as I wrote yesterday, if guys think they can get away with anything, they're liable to do anything.
Well, absolutely. And if that's been the culture there, then it takes
exactly. Then
it takes a stand to say, hey, we need to go back this way and start adjudicating races in a different manner. And guess what? When you hit them in the pocketbook, you know, let's face it, that's where it hurts. And time on the sidelines will make people change their ways.
Well, we're almost 40 minutes in, and of course, you know, portion of the opening was going to be about being here at University of Arizona and the symposium. But let's talk a little bit of racing here until Tony and Rich join us at the top of the hour. And Hammer, I mean, obviously from a high level racing conversation, the four stakes in New York are the major discussion, and you know, the three-year-old races were both good and engaging. Mo Donegal and Zandon, and of course there'll be some discussion about whether Zandon should have been put up. Nest was very good. Todd Pletcher, who will not join us until tomorrow, and of course another University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program graduate. Todd is traveling to Florida this morning, so he said, how about Tuesday? No problem. But Todd with a 3 out of 4 sweep, culminating with American Revolution, the three-year-old New York bred that beats Todd's stablemate, the following C, in the Cigar Mile. And American Revolution really finished the season with a flourish, with 4 triple-digit buyers, and kind of further enhances the whole three-year-old picture. That's a very nice, I mean, obviously the Malibu to open Santa Anita, you know, 3 weeks from now. But American Revolution, for him to win a grade one after, you know, the third in the Pennsylvania Derby with Hot Rod Charlie and Midnight Bourbon, really speaks well of this three-year-old group. It's going to be even with the horses we've lost to graduate to retirement. This has been a very good group of three-year-olds.
I think you're right, and I think I took a little bit of following C, which we talked about a couple days before, and you had mentioned that, you know what, I tell you, this New York bred is something special.
No, and then I left him off the pick six ticket. I was live to three horses, so pick six carryover.
With the carryover, a lot of people watch those races, maybe a lot more than would have normally because of the carryover, so it's kind of cool. But I was standing there in the crowd at Oaklawn Park, and I was, by the time the race was over, I was leaning, I was almost perpendicular leaning to the right, hoping, waiting for that wire to get there. But, nice New York bred, and another three-year-old second, obviously, too. So maybe, please let's let some of these stick around and carry on into next year. And that's obviously been our problem. We get the good ones, and then they seem to go away. So, yeah, good day of racing there. Todd wins three. Kind of disappointed in Todd, which I'll talk to him tomorrow. He's on a plane flight.
Yeah. Instead of coming here? He's come. There was that. He's come plenty of times.
Oh, I know. But I can give him a little.
Oh, sure.
Because he was a couple years ago. He was here, and we had a little mini get together for us. I was lucky to go to school with Todd here, and little did I know that what was lurking in the third row back there, going through school.
Who else was around that class?
Well, Martin, Panza, Ted Nicholson, Mike Carlo, Luke Kreitbosch, Chuck Simon. I'm just leaving some people out, but that was the heart of it. We had a good crew. A little mischievous on the side too.
So the basketball games must have been top notch.
You mean our games or the school?
The school was great.
He'd wake up
with Lute Olson, but I mean with Chuck and Todd and you had a big forecourt.
We did pretty good in some of the intramurals.
Yeah, absolutely.
But we had a really good time, and it was a lot of fun for me because I was a couple years older than most of them. So
that's right.
This was, let me tell you. It's like you talk about back to school. When you've done it and then you get to go back again, you learn a few tricks. And I had a blast here, let's just say.
Want to slip in a couple of the other results. And as good as American Revolution and Following C were, Lady Rocket was spectacular for Brad Cox. And in fact, Brad will be here tomorrow. What did he win? Did he win the big sport of turfdom? Right? Did he get that?
He did.
I think so. Right?
So you say here, he'll be here.
He's here tomorrow.
Yeah, that's good. You mentioned that. Now we finished our opening weekend at Oaklawn.
Yep.
3 days in December. I'll repeat that. 3 days of Oaklawn in December. And, I missed yesterday's racing, but... You know what? Let me just tell you. Seeing people, not just a few people in the stands, I think, when they announced 15,000 for Friday and 20,000 for Saturday, I walked those grandstands and back and forth. They're, every level was full. And, people just like to come out and see racing there. So I would say this is an evaluation to see how it goes early December. Fill in a gap there rather than have the break going into the January meet. And the horses are trickling in. We're almost full. And they won't be quite as ready to run as they were before with the break, but we're filling the cards. Today we're taking it. We filled four cards so far. And I think management was happy, not only with the track attendance, but the handle in the casino was a boost. And the hotel was fuller than it normally would be. So that was the whole idea when we had Mr. Sell on the other day, was to show off the whole property to the not only the city but the state. And I think they've responded by saying, "Hey, this is pretty cool."
It was great to be there Friday. Everything built up. the way we had anticipated. It was great to see any number of people, whether they're people that I see whenever we come to Oaklawn, our friends George and Don Payden, who turns out are a couple of doors down from you, from the condo at the Landing. How was Jerry Karum's birthday party?
I did not make that.
You didn't get down there?
I did not make that.
Okay.
I had a one of those decisions to make, traveling the next day. Did I want a head knocker when I woke up in the morning?
There you
or not?
Go. All right.
I
did happy
the,
birthday.
I did the right thing.
Happy 60th to Jerry Karum, yes. Who was a fun and popular owner and habitant of Hot Springs. But I ran into, I was introduced to Tom, the clergyman that I've interacted with on Twitter. You know, people come up to you and introduce themselves. It's one of the pleasures of being able to travel around. And then, you know, the first race, Aaron Shorter wins the first, and it went from there. And speaking of which, here's a couple of notes. The first 3 days of racing, because it occurred to me as I was looking at the charts and I tallied it up, 13 winners of the 28 races came out of Churchill. Last start, four from Indiana, two from Keeneland, two from Remington, one each from Hawthorne, Canterbury, Colonial, Oaklawn, and Arlington. And there were two first-time starters in the maiden races, one from McPeak and one from Asmussen. And Asmussen off to a good start, including a win with Ricardo Santana Jr. On day one. Asmussen four for the first 12 that he sent out. Brad Cox, Chris Hartman, John Ortiz, Robertino Diodoro, Norm Cash, and Paul Holtis each have got two wins to start this first weekend. Cox with another 5 seconds, nine starters, two wins in 5 seconds, and Francisco Arrieta, who's absolutely, I think, cementing himself among the top journeyman ranks. Five wins from his first 18 mounts,
including
another 3 seconds.
The natural pick four on
which
Saturday,
which was crazy.
That
was
I don't think
Friday.
I've seen that.
It was crazy.
Was it Friday? Yeah, Friday.
Opening day.
Pretty wild.
It was nuts.
So we'd highlighted. We've highlighted him and Cabrera as the two that came in last year to see what they could do, and lo and behold, they finished second and third, and they're going to be right up there battling for the title this year on a consistent basis.
Off and running at Oaklawn and finished running at Woodbine. And how about yesterday? When 12 furlongs is in play, Sir Winston, your Belmont winner from 2 years ago, Sir Winston wins the valedictory at Woodbine to end the meet. And even though it started late, they had a terrific, overall terrific meet in Toronto. Turfway off and running. Because I did those stats at Oaklawn, it got me poking around. I looked at Turfway's opening week as well. Cox off to a good start there, 3 for 6. Larry Rivelli, 5 board hits and 6 starters, 2 wins, a second and 2 thirds. And much like Arrieta at Oaklawn, Gerardo Corrales, how about 9 wins from 25 starts with 3 seconds and 2/3? Joe Talamo off pretty well, too. He's hit the board 11 out of 17 to start the meet there. And Joe Rocco is only 1 for 17, but he's got 8 seconds. You want to talk about seconditis? And then I said, you know what? Let me see what's going on at Fairgrounds. And I found something shocking.
And what's that?
Steve Asmussen, 0 for 12. Brendan Walsh, 0 for 9. Mike Maker, 0 for 9. Keith DeSormo, 0 for 9. How about that at Fairgrounds 2 weeks in? 0 for 39 between Asmussen, Walsh, Maker, and DeSormo.
Well, you won't see that.
Crazy.
But you know what that means? When they light up, they're going to win in bunches.
Tell you who is winning. Jose Camejo is 7 for 21 with 5 seconds. Sam David, 6 for 18. Tom Amos, 5 for 12. Al Stahl's only sent out 8 so far, but he's got 3 wins and 3 thirds. I rarely do this kind of thing, but once I did Oakland, I said, now I'm curious about the other venues. And a couple of other notes as we get close to
the Starlet.
The Starlet, and actually the Byakoa too. Baffert with Ada, the Munnings filly, and it seems like a modest bunch right now. Wins under Juan Hernandez, 78 buyer for Ada, and as time goes by, won the Byakoa yesterday. So Baffert with the pair. I suppose we could use that as a segue to also mention it doesn't necessarily decide anything, and the KHRC, there's a long way to go, undoubtedly, in the Medina Spirit Derby adjudication. But the testing that was done basically confirms that the betamethasone positive was from the topical as opposed to an injected version. And they tell that from the metabolites. Alan, when Alan Foreman joins us, I'll let Alan riff on this. It doesn't mitigate the the calling of a positive, but it does support the version of events that that Baffert and Medina Spirit and Amir our Zidane are have championed.
I'm glad. I'm glad to hear that. But
it doesn't,
once again, why isn't Kentucky Horse Racing Commission announcing it?
Well, because I guess I don't know. Again, Alan, I want Alan Foreman for this.
Right.
It all it did was set off, of course, another round of half recrimination, half half exaltation. I don't know. This is a situation that's not going to have a happy result, no matter what transpires. Maybe for Judmont and and Brad Cox and Mandaloon. But I much like the situation, Rick, involving Ortiz and the suspension, these kinds of scenarios, there's so many more working parts to the administration of the sport to discuss. So that's as much of an issue when these topics are when they come to a head.
How they're handled and
the
timeliness of it is just mind-boggling.
Well, the cumbersome gear meshing that the industry is involved in, basically.
And it's state to state, and unfortunately, of course, it's different from state to state, which is even worse. But we have HISA. Is it HISA or HISA? Make the call. HISA.
I think HISA is. I forget. There's a preferred way that they want it. They want it pronounced, but
we'll make sure that we say it the other way. Right, we'll find right. Flip the coin. I mean, just. But maybe this is one of the things they could get done. Is can we have some timelines set for this stuff? I never understood how the first sample comes back in 2 weeks and the split sample comes back in a year. please, shouldn't they? When a trainer applies for his license, there should be a little box right there. Please put down your preferred lab right there.
So preferred lab.
You know what I'm saying. I'm going, so now we have to wait up 3 months for them to find a lab, and then we move on from there. It's very, like you said, cumbersome is a good word. But it just follows society. We don't do anything we don't get anything done quick in the court system. So let's see what happens here. Like I said, that was announced by the lawyers, and I hope the findings are right.
Oh, I think I mean, in terms of what they tested I don't think anybody's going to question what those results say.
There will be people that question it.
Well,
that's the problem.
Well, okay.
Not rightfully so, but
the problem and the huge issue here, the part of it that I thought that was so maddening was to have gone back to last Breeders' Cup and Baffert saying they were going to bring in a quality control manager and then failing to execute that. And one of my favorite expressions that people have heard me say for a long time, when you're walking on eggs, don't hop. And that's the case here. And so the scenario of people saying, shrugging their shoulders and saying this has been brought on themselves is accurate. And, you know, in discussing, you know, what's going to happen with the the Baffert 2-year-olds, soon to be three, that conversation, I suppose there's a case to be made that they might try to, you know, even with the anticipated disqualification of Medina Spirit, if that's what's going to happen, that, you know, this factor could be used as a way to, you know, negotiate further with Churchill. I don't know. But it the biggest problem here is that all of it was avoidable had the Baffert team, Bob down through the veterinary staff and everybody involved, had done what they promised they were going to do. And that was to redouble their efforts of quality control and management. And the fact that nobody realized they were putting a topical lotion on a Derby contender that could metabolite into something that was going to test is inexcusable. Period. End of story. And that's the thing that is just, to me, I mean, you're at the highest level of the game. You can't be oblivious to these kinds of things. And frankly, just like we're recriminating and admonishing the stewards in New York about allowing the situation to get to the point it did on the racetrack Friday and Saturday with Ortiz, the same complaint has been levied against CHRB and the way in which they've handled any number of scenarios involving the Baffert team. And so, again, this all gets into the gear meshing involved in this sport.
Couldn't have said it better, tell you the truth. There is some blame there. There's no doubt about it. You know, I just wish that these things could happen quicker, looked at, decision made, and move on, instead of just lingering. But such is our game. And we're getting close to the top of the hour here, which is great. So we'll hear from two two of the best.
And knowing that this...
At commenting on what's going on.
Well, because their
experiences.
Their entire lives are completely, you know, ingrained in it. And before we take the break, in case I do want to take a break at the top, because that way, because I got a feeling the boys will go, they may go well past the bottom of the hour, or the bottom of 10:30. Couple quick ones. We mentioned back to Oaklawn for a second. That Advent Friday, KVOD for Hartman, and then on Saturday, that Mariah's Princess with a very nice effort by from Phil Bauer.
Right. Now,
Mr. Bigney.
He had mentioned, I heard a couple of, racetrack, that he really, rumors that he was really high on this horse and was really excited about this race. Timing-wise, it couldn't have been better. And she got hammered late. She was 8-1 in the program, and then it was 4, 7-2, 3, ended up going off at 2-1. And I think she was in the 8-hole. And when the gates opened, Brett Calhoun's filly was kind of hustled to the lead, and Martine Garcia took a little bit back, got the outside going into the first turn, and basically I think the race was over then. And he just waited until the top of the lane and opened up. And one thing you got to remember about Oaklawn, I started to see it here, just when you think a horse is clear, someone's coming in the lane. It happens over and over and over. So, don't be one of those guys that says, you got it, you're in inside the 16th pole, because they just keep coming there in waves. So, but this filly just took off and went on, and you know, she's going to be all right. She had just won an allowance race, mm-hmm. very handily.
At Churchill.
Was this her first time in a stake?
First time
in
two turns.
And first time in a stake as well.
No, not she tried the Dixie Belle,
She did try the Dixie Belle last year. But coming off that 7th-8th race, which she went, that looked like she wanted to go on.
And
but anyway, she's got a future. I think she's a real nice filly.
90 buyer for her. That's a career best. I'll mention before we go to the break as well, at Gulfstream, they had the Claiming Crown seemed to go well. I had seen speculation that Safi Joseph was well positioned, and indeed comes away with 3 wins. Face of Victory won the Express, and Sugar Fix won the Tierra, and 12 Volt Man won the Jewel. Nice job by Mike Welch, who had made Bad Beat Brian his best bet. That came in the Memorial. That Michael Matz, who else? Jeff Hiles got his. I saw where Jeff actually tweeted. He was excited with Blue Steel, with Paco to win the Iron Horse. You had Jane Sabelli and Paco win the Distaff Dash.
What surfaces were these run on? Just out of curiosity.
All of them. Everything. They had turf and
Tapeta. And dirt.
I don't think they ran anything on the Tapeta. No, they didn't run anything on the Tapeta, just the turf.
Okay. I was just curious.
What did I miss? Eddie Plisso, miles ahead, won the Rapid Transit with Paco. So Paco had a good day. And Scotty Lake, Sweet Wilhelmina, won the Glass Slipper.
There's enough tracks around now. There's enough tracks around now where they could have have to get eligible on Tapeta and then have a Tapeta race.
Maybe,
Tapeta Claiming Crown.
They could probably add one long, one short, maybe. It's already a 12 race card. I don't know.
Are they all Claiming Crown?
No. There was a maiden race and an allowance early on the card. Everything else was Claiming Crown. Yeah. And before we go to the break, Tampa. Let me slip in quickly. Tampa. It looks like Mark Cassie, who actually might even reach out to today. Mark had a nice weekend. Cassie, Strategic Bird, for Gary Barber, wins the Sandpiper, 82 buyer for her under Gallardo, and in the inaugural Ralph Nix. And this was certainly heartening for Ralph and Stacy and the barn in the wake of Morris Nix's passing about 10 days ago. Katin wins the inaugural, 79 buyer, Sammy Camacho aboard. And a nice assortment of, they had a nice card, actually, with all those two-year-old races. Safi Joseph won that opener, mile and 40 yards. That horse looked okay, Surreal Fantasy, with Centeno. Graham Motion, by the way, Motion with a winner by the name of Great Britain, which made me smile. And the Motion barn has come alive pretty much everywhere they're running. There's a quick overview, and one more stake note before we go to the break. Bullseye Beauty, Andy McKeever, delighted for Andy. What a great way to start the Turfway season. Bullseye Beauty with Joe Talamo in the holiday inaugural at Turfway Park. Nice for Andrew McKeever and his barn. All right, let's take a break. We'll come back. You're going to hear from Tony Black and from Rich Migliori together. They will examine Affair Ortiz. When we come back, we're at University of Arizona's racetrack industry program symposium on racing. Back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only three states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's Live Foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Sirius XM Sports presents